Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Undercover Art Intel, Ipsy's Art Supply, the best art store around, Cindy Gear. Ground Cover Vendor Number 279. As I came into the wonderful Ipsy Art Supply, I was surprised at the warm atmosphere and the nice music playing in the background. The owner, Megan Fullenauer, is truly attentive to each customer, assisting them in their artistic endeavors. She gets into detail with each individual's needs with the art projects and gives out good advice for the art supplies needed. Megan shared her story with me. I first came up with this idea of an art supply store back in 2015. I just wrote out the idea. I was frustrated because of all the best art stores were shutting down. For example, the university bookstore closed. This made me upset. So much loss and truly hard for art students on campus. Then we lost Art Attack, the EMU art store in 2013. Ulrich's moved some time ago, but when we lost Hollander's, I threw up my hands and declared, I'm doing an art store. My great supporter and friend, Jean Estridge, had proudly announced I was the first artist in Stone and Spoon's gallery. But it was Jean who encouraged me to go for it. I first started out in Riverside Art Center from April to December in 2023. After that, I moved to the spot I'm in now, 42 North Huron Street. What I love about this location is the storefront to show off all the art supplies people could buy. This is a huge deal for me. Megan has a 3-year contract, and her idea has become a dream realized into action that will benefit all the local artists of Washtenaw County. I am now doing this full time, and it's a work in progress, Megan told me. My dream is to sell happy art supplies. She continues, my main job was as a multimedia specialist. I worked for 23 years at the University of Michigan. I am now a freelancer. One project I am hoping to do is to teach classical art classes in watercolor and natural arts, as well as drawing and anatomy. Her store has many supplies. Beam, watercolor, and acrylic paints. Watercolor paints. Handmade paints. Winsor & Newton ink and paints, speedball ink for printmaking, Japanese paper and pens, Liquidex acrylic and varnish, Gamble's paint supplies. Large paper, watercolor large paper, additional paints. Paint brushes, oil pastels and chalk pastels. Mod Podge, wood sets for carving, markers. Posca paints, professional markers and pens. Basic wood supplies, air dry clay, children's corner fabric markers, Crayola, and bookmaking supplies. Megan added, "My motto is, I will order anything for anyone from anywhere. Give me a website and we will work to help you. All of my inventory is on my website, ipsyartsupply.com. Order ahead for pickup." For more on Megan's impressive credentials and background, visit the Who We Are section of the website, ipsyartsupply.com.
Juneteenth is about being free. I love Juneteenth. Juneteenth is a very special holiday for me. It is a very special holiday for a lot of people in the world, too. Juneteenth is a holiday about celebrating being free. I think everybody needs someone to help them and take care of them sometimes. But being free is very important too. It is perfect that Juneteenth is in June. It is special because June is a summer month. It is a perfect time to have a special holiday. Juneteenth is very fun. Juneteenth is very colorful too. Juneteenth is a day you can barbecue and have picnics. Juneteenth is a time you can just relax and have your favorite foods and enjoy friends. It is a time where you can play fun games and activities. It is a time to remember good times with family and friends. Everybody can celebrate Juneteenth no matter how different they look and act. Juneteenth is a very special holiday. Juneteenth is comfortable and colorful. I hope we all have a very good Juneteenth.
People in the neighborhood. This is Casey's story. Casey was born in Ann Arbor in 1985. She grew up in the village of Manchester and was raised by her great aunt, Alta. Her fondest memory of childhood is her confirmation at the Emmanuel Church of Christ. She was asked to memorize a chapter of the Bible. She chose Ecclesiastes 3 from the Old Testament. Her church elders suggested that she become a preacher because they told her she had what she called a testimony before I had a testimony. When I asked her about her childhood in Manchester, she said she was bullied a lot in school. Why? I asked. Well, I guess I would say because I was the NGR in town. Looking back, I was the only minority. What's great is that it's illegal now. It's a crime. That doesn't change anything for me, but I'm glad that people are seeing that it's bad for kids. While racial bullying is not actually a hate crime, it is still traumatic and evidence of systemic racism. from an article by Cheryl Chapman, a licensed psychotherapist. Bullying is a broad phenomenon and experience. However, racial bullying is very distinct and has a unique outcomes for individuals of color, especially adolescents. What are the impacts of racial trauma? Racism, discrimination, microaggressions, and other forms of hate, both physical and non-physical, are linked to negative mental health outcomes such as depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Additionally, these experiences may lead to feelings of isolation and invisibility for students of color. The current administration is attempting to eradicate the discourse on systemic racism in the public school curriculum. See Executive Order 14190. I asked Casey, "What was your family like?" Casey replied, "My mom is alive, but not well. She's 60 and has cancer. She wants to make amends, but won't friend me on Facebook. I want to see her before she dies." I asked, "What is keeping you from seeing her?" She said, "Space and opportunity." "Where does she live?" I asked. Casey replied, "She lives in West Virginia on the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains." "Do you have any other family?" I asked. She replied, "I have one sister who is happily married. I also have a brother, Shane, who goes by Shorty, and an older brother, Brandon, who goes by Loki. My daddy was Raymond Bishop, a.k.a. Cadillac Ray. I never knew him, but I knew of him. I've never seen his face. All anyone could tell me is he played cards. My auntie raised me. She was actually my great aunt. R.I.P. She was 92 when she died." Casey seems to feel an incredible amount of guilt about her great aunt and believes that becoming homeless is a price she is paying. "Because I ran away," she said. "And because of how I made her feel every day for no reason, and why I take so much pain from this world is because I let her die alone. I was stupid, but the wages of sin is death. I'm so ashamed because of how I made her feel, and it wasn't even her I ran away from. It was the village of Manchester." Casey moved to Ypsilanti at 13 to stay with her mother in a trailer park on Michigan Ave, which is now an abandoned lot. She says, "I had to get out of Manchester, but then things didn't map out." "What was your plan?" I asked. "That my mom would love me." She did not say much more about her life since then. We talked about her current situation. "Are you homeless now?" She replied, "Correct." Casey lives on the streets and in the parks of Ypsilanti. Sometimes she stays on a friend's couch, but most of the time in a tent, which is frequently disrupted by what she calls domestic situations. She says, "It's no matter who I'm with, black, white, male, female, it doesn't matter which direction I go, I find myself in these domestic situations. This has been happening my whole life." I asked her, "Do you have a plan for finding housing?" She said, "I'm trying to get into rapid rehousing through Avalon. Here's my plan. I have an eye appointment today, so once I get my eyesight restored, I'm thinking about gainful employment. I could do a minimum wage job, you know, like the coffee shop up the street, something like that." "What's going on with your eyesight?" I asked. "I had astigmatism in both eyes and retinal detachment. I have holes in my retinas, so they zapped them in both my eyes. It hurt like hell." In addition to retinal attachment and type 2 diabetes, Casey has several mental illness diagnoses. I asked if she would share about her illnesses. Casey says, "Yes, I've been diagnosed with bipolar type 2, borderline personality disorder, substance abuse disorder, PTSD, and basically issues of trust, mom issues, dad issues, God issues." She laughs out loud at that last part. While the eye surgery is in progress, her mental health care is not. Community Mental Health of Washtenaw County dropped her case after she missed 3 medication reviews in a row. She's in the process of appealing that decision. She says, "Some people need their medication, and I'm one of them, 100%. Like I've got no control over my emotions at this point. The medication I take at night is all out of my system by the morning. So in my situation, I don't have a stable place where I can get back on my medication. I'm seriously considering the possibility of a 9th floor stay at U of M because at least then I would have a safe place to be back on my medicine. I don't know, it's just in the back of my mind." The 9th floor at the University of Michigan Hospital is the psych ward. "If you could go to college, what would you study?" "Law," she says. "I want to know my rights." "To know your rights is to be able to defend your rights. I'm treated like I don't have any, but I also don't know them. Knowledge is power, and I could use that to my advantage. Tell me something you enjoy about life. Casey says, I pray for sunshine. It just does something for my soul. The sun shining always gives everybody a reason to go on. I pray for it. God does it. It's the power of prayer and manifestation. Go outside and look skyward, God tells me all the time. That's enough for me. Like today, it was a cloudy day until I prayed about it. Casey has a calling. According to her and her relationship with God, she is a chosen one, destined for greatness on the order of Moses leading the Israelites through the desert or Noah building the ark. An awakening, she calls it. Yeah, it's happening, she says. I'm getting bits and pieces here and there. Casey points to a cloud and says, you watch, that cloud is going to disappear. Indeed, within moments, it did. People in the Neighborhood is a column about the unhoused community in Ypsilanti. This was Casey's story.
Reading Between the Lines by Ken Parks, ground cover vendor number 490. The amount of information flooding our senses will drown you unless you sharpen the sword of discriminating awareness. This article was first inspired by a Reddit news flash on my iPhone. 500,000 Syrian refugees return home after the fall of Bashar al-Assad. The compliance narrative assumption is that they fled because Assad is a bad guy. Those who study history remember President George W. Bush and his mission accomplished speech in 2003. Plan for a new American century was quickly formed. The list of countries to be targeted for regime change included Syria. As the war in Syria progressed, it became a complex civil war with U.S.-supported ISIS creating many refugees. The masters of war blame others for the suffering they plan and execute. Divide and conquer has a long history and is a common modus operandi. So Assad is blamed for all the refugees that the war against him caused. Today, the Cuban government is blamed by the standard narrative for all the refugees fleeing Cuba. You can name one country after another with Venezuela included in the list. Every country hit with U.S. sanctions will have a refugee situation. You might well believe the media unless you have learned to read between the lines. Mind training is available for developing the sword of spiritual awareness. Manjushri of the Buddhist tradition is a spiritual hero who wields this sword well. A sizable local community of mind training practitioners is alive and open. You may already know Kempel Chipel from the Karuna Buddhist Center at the upper room of Bethlehem United Church of Christ. Look around and marvel at the choices. Chuck Barbieri gave me a tour of White Lotus, a living village farm that is Buddhist-centered. I was amazed at the scope of that community. If you are a beginner at handling this sword, you at least know that a natural breath is the beginning of your learning. Breathing with your core takes practice and instruction hand in hand. Those who are willing to take refuge in the reality we share to the deepest truth can go to the heart of the matter with Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakya, in his name, refers to his clan heritage from indigenous kinds, and Muni is sage. foremost among the sages of this world. He was some 500 years before Jesus. There are enough stories from yoga masters about Jesus in India that a documentary was made. It brings Jesus to life as a master of mind training and the unity of body, speech, and mind. Life is school, and advanced students can learn how to graduate from this life to more fully awakened awareness in pure lands, the all-good expanse of primordial purity. The words we use to understand reality bring us to the theater of the mind. We learn that reality is more than a word and that definitions do not define reality. Those who master words, even word artists, may not have a clue about the meanings of the words that flow so eloquently from their mouth or keyboard. The best story of this reality is found in the biography of Naropa, who is a lineage holder in the Karma Kagyu tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. To learn more, reading the book is best, but Google is pretty good. If you only enter Naropa, it will take you to the university in Boulder, Colorado, which is named for him. Look for him as a lineage holder. The story of the old hag who confronts his mastery of words but not the meanings of the words is legendary. It is possible to learn discriminating awareness and wield that sword well. Once you begin to understand the meanings of the words, your ability to read between the lines will accelerate. Appearances are deceptive, and we will learn that reality is more complete than the appearances of reality. Shunyata, usually translated as emptiness, is the all-embracing nature of appearances. The middle path embraces emptiness by avoiding the extremes of nihilism and eternalism. Jamgon Kongtrul Rinpoche spoke eloquently on this. Many books are written about emptiness, but the practice of mind training is the key to experiencing the truth of the matter. Both Marxists and Buddhists talk about dialectics and the unity of opposites. Every truth seeker will discover the resonance that concepts can play in pointing to the truth. The Zen saying, "The finger that points at the moon is not the moon," illustrates how concepts are simply pointers and empty by their nature. When I was a science guy, having abandoned religion for science, I thought I was some kind of master of reality. If you study atoms and molecules, you will learn about electron rings and the nucleus. Each ring has a valence, an energy charge that interacts with the electron rings of neighboring atoms as they interact to form molecules, which are collections of atoms. You may have some awareness that the gap between rings and between molecules is pure space, which you sense is the main characteristic of the universe. Empty space becomes profoundly interesting, even magical. The mystery deepens with quantum mechanics. When you understand Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, you will know that reality cannot be measured decisively and all matter is a vibration in an energy field of emptiness. If you discover the clear light of the void, see my previous articles, you are near to fully awakened awareness. The Mahamudra prayer points at this in one line. Unwavering attention is the body of meditation, as is taught. To the meditator who observes the play of the mind without changing anything, grant your blessing that samsara and nirvana be realized inseparably. This understanding of concepts and experience will be a great help in coming to full and complete awakening. Compassion and loving kindness thrive here. We may discover that Jesus and Buddha our brothers, and that Marx is some kind of prophet, as Martin Luther King taught us that the arc of history bends towards justice. We are preparing ourselves to engage in the struggle for freedom. Hasta la victoria siempre is commonly said in Cuba, along with La Lucha Sigue. Always towards victory, and the struggle continues.
Advocacy, empathy, equity, justice. Wolverine Street Medicine is filling healthcare gaps. By Mike Jones, ground cover vendor number 113. In my youth, I wanted to be a medical doctor because my grandmother used to work in the emergency room as a transporter, where she used to move patients around the University of Michigan Hospital. Now that I have met some of the members of Wolverine Street Medicine and I have become aware of their practice, I believe I would have made a good street medicine physician. Wolverine Street Medicine was founded in 2017 by medical students at the University of Michigan Medical School, who were inspired by other local street medicine organizations and understood the health injustices faced by unhoused individuals in our community. Today, they are a student-run organization focused on caring for the health of those experiencing homelessness in Washtenaw County and Detroit. Their mission is to partner with individuals experiencing homelessness to meet their medical and social needs and to cultivate compassion and relevant knowledge in the future health professional workforce. They accomplish this mission through organizing street runs, foot care clinics, and harm reduction events across Southeast Michigan. They also educate healthcare providers and trainees through volunteer events, educational sessions, hands-on training, and a rotation for senior medical students. They aim to conduct all of the activities in partnership with the community organizations and people who have lived experience in order to develop programs that clients desire and appreciate. These are their commitments. 1. Unconditional positive regard. 2. Continuous improvement and sustainability. 3. Community-driven programs. 4. Meet people where they are. 5. Develop human connections. Meet Brent C. Williams, MD, Professor of Internal Medicine. Dr. Williams, a graduate of University of Illinois College of Medicine, has been on faculty at the University of Michigan Medical School since 1989 and is set to retire at the end of this month. In 2010, one of his jobs was to engage the medical school with the community and to connect students to communities in Detroit, other parts of Michigan, low-income communities, and impoverished communities nationwide. Students would have to do projects in connection with these communities. A doctor named Stephen T. Lichtenstein, then a student at U of M Medical School, went to Detroit on his own and got connected to the Wayne State Street Outreach Program. He started working in the Detroit area for a short period of time, but soon faded out. In 2015, a group of medical students came to Dr. Williams and said they wanted to be involved with street medicine. He replied, "You guys don't know anything about street medicine, and what do you guys want to do?" So he asked them to do their homework, and for the first 2 years, they did their research, finding out what resources were already available and what medical services were most needed. After the medical students did their research and assessments, they came back to Dr. Williams with their findings. The students were convinced they wanted to do the work and that there was a need. They believed they could fulfill that need. Then Dr. Williams told them that students come and go. We need to make sure that this endeavor is sustainable. He asked them to make a commitment and to be in it for the long haul. Then he asked them how they were going to do that. So the students went about building relationships in the community by connecting with Wayne State Street Outreach Program and federal qualified health centers in Washtenaw County area and Detroit. And from there, they started their program, Wolverine Street Medicine. The students set a system in place so that when one group of students graduates, another group of students will be ready and on board to take over. This is what Dr. Williams meant when using the word sustainable. This was truly a student-led initiative, and year after year, the students have been building this program with the backing and support of the U of M Medical School. Meet Jim Bastien, an RN and community liaison. Jim Bastien is a registered nurse, a graduate of Washtenaw County Community College, and has nearly 2 decades of experience working with the homeless population in Southeast Michigan. He helped found Wolverine Street Medicine, serving as an advisor and mentor to students and faculty. He recently retired from Washtenaw County Community Mental Health, PATH, where he led their street outreach efforts and helped community members experiencing homelessness find housing. Bastien has been with Wolverine Street Medicine since 2017. He told me that he wanted our readers to know the incredible work ethic of all the WSM students over the years. These students came from all different backgrounds, but they all share the passion to help and serve others.
Meet Mira Bhagat, U of M medical student. Mira Bhagat did her undergrad at the University of California, Los Angeles, and now is a first-year medical student at the U of M Medical School. She wanted to get involved with street medicine because, being from the Los Angeles area, she sees the unhoused everywhere. In her medical career, she wants to give back and sees an immediate need in the unhoused community. While she attended UCLA, she joined a project called Mobile Clinic Project. Mobile Clinic Project is a student-run medical group that is involved in street medicine in the Los Angeles area. Bhagat wants to go into family medicine as a primary care physician and work for a federal qualified health center where she would work in the clinic and in street medicine. Meet Amanda Cassetti, U of M medical student. Amanda Cassetti did their undergrad at the University of Michigan and is now in the U of M School of Medicine. This is their third year in medical school, and they will do their residency to become an emergency room doctor when they graduate. Cassetti got into street medicine because they lived in the Detroit area during the pandemic, and they were doing a lot of volunteer work serving the unhoused. So when it came back to come back to Ann Arbor to attend medical school, they decided to join WSM and to keep doing what they love to do, as well as providing medical assistance for those who need it. Cassetti expressed their passion for making connections and relationships in the unhoused community and wants to give a big thank you to Fleet Feet Running Shoe Store on the corner of 4th and Liberty for helping WSM help the unhoused community by donating hundreds of pairs of shoes. When it comes to foot care, a comfortable pair of shoes that fits is half the battle. Many interviewees gave a shout out to Molly Fessler, a Wolverine Street Medicine alumna and current resident in psychiatry at Duke University, for her concern and understanding the importance of foot care. Just like the military during wartime, foot care is paramount because you always are on the move under harsh conditions and circumstances. This is true for those facing homelessness as well. We need to take care of our feet because our feet are the window into a lot of aspects of our bodily health overall. I would like to thank you to all the U of M medical students, past, present, and future, for your needed medical services in the community. Wolverine Street Medicine Clinic Schedule. In Detroit, the first and third Saturdays at Manameal Soup Kitchen, located at St. Peter's Episcopal Church, 1950 Trumbull in Detroit. In Washtenaw County, at the Ypsilanti District Library Downtown Branch at 229 West Michigan Avenue in Ypsilanti. They'll be there on Mondays from 1 to 3. On Liberty Plaza, which is at 310 South Division Street in Ann Arbor. They'll be there from Mondays from 4 to 5. St. Andrew's Breakfast Program, which is at 306 North Division Street in Ann Arbor. They're there every other Friday from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m., conducting foot care only. And you can reach them by phone at 734-436-1172. You can leave a voicemail or text. Wolverine Street Medicine relies on donations to provide the free services they offer to the unhoused community. Donations go directly to purchasing medications, supplies, and necessities for their clients. If you would like to purchase something on their Amazon wish list, donate online, directly by mail, or discuss other ways to donate, please email at wolverinestreetmedicine@gmail.com for more information.
Go the distance. Eyes will tell you everything is far away. If you walk, you will never make it. Fear says that it takes a long time to be successful. Yapping at the mouth, no need for complaining. Society questions your inner identity. How long before a person's strength shows? The sun beams, but clouds cover it. Does that mean the sun still smiling even though? We are born destined to fail, that doesn't mean we have to. Luck comes and it goes. What will be on my side today? Never try and you'll never know. Life is a race, you are only the only contestant. The mind and body challenges, do you accept it? Sprint, go the distance.
Heralds of Spring. elfin blue flowers, harbingers of spring, conjuring visions of Shakespeare's fancy. What will the summer bring? What's life have in store? What adventures will be transpiring for those with fool's whimsy? Elfin blue flowers exploding on winter's grave, battling morning's frost as fierce as any brave. What will the summer bring? How many babies this spring? Where are the fairies of Titania going? Whose adventures will result of Oberon's doing? Elfin blue flowers, welcome and be merry. Rouse the bees from their torpor. Remind us there are fairies.
Hello everybody, my name is Wayne S. What do you think of when you think of AI? 5 years ago, most people would still have been imagining disciplined, humanoid robot takeovers or self-driving cars. Nowadays, some think of sending goofy prompts into ChatGPT, while others remember times, say, when writing college finals or even grant applications. What we should think of instead is facial recognition, surveillance, personal data algorithms, and automated weapons. Because it is these types of projects that provide the funding and political force behind the development of artificial intelligence. On December 5th, 2024, Ann Arbor Spark, local economic accelerator, and University of Michigan Research announced in similar release that U of M and Los Alamos National Laboratory are co-developing a $1.2 billion AI research facility focused on science, energy, and national security. Los Alamos National Laboratory is based in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and is the creator of the atomic bomb. The partnering institution called this data center a catalyst for Southeast Michigan and a significant investment in Ypsilanti Township. As tech investments are all too often described, the facility will have two parts. One for collaborative research between U of M facility students and Los Alamos, and another for Los Alamos scientists and engineers to address national security challenges using AI and high-performance computing. When you look at computing power, in other words, the resources needed to run the data center, the first part of the project focused on education and training is only using 9%, while the second part that is exclusive to military purposes take 91%. The project is planned to be located on South Hydro Park in Ypsilanti Township, a 20-acre property at 10221 Textile Road, near the West Willow neighborhood. Residents in this area have read between the lines on this facility and are organizing to stop it before the ground breaks. Reasons to stop. The facility will be all electric, but substantial amounts of water are needed to cool down the machinery to prevent it from overheating or breaking down. According to research, uofm.edu, all water used by the facility will come from municipal water sources. The Ypsilanti Community Utility Authority has confirmed adequate water and wastewater capacity. Although Ypsilanti Township is not experiencing a fresh water shortage at this moment, NPR's Stephen Starr reported on May 20th that nearly 1 in 4 data centers are located in the Great Lakes states, and warns that at the current large but unknown rate of water usage in the Great Lakes region, is charging towards unsustainable. Further, electricity in Washtenaw County is not green nor reliable. The water used to cool the plant needs to be dealt with one way or another, whether using closed loop cooling, natural evaporation, or neither. Substantial resources are necessary to keep the machine running. In online forums, community members have stated other reasons for opposing the research facility, including surrendering large plots of land to non-taxable entities, the pattern of gentrification in neighborhoods which U of M and or tech investments foreseeable noise pollution, lack of jobs for existing residents, and the purpose of the research itself. Local resistance. In March 2025, seemingly overnight, stickers with the simple message of "Stop the data center, stop the quantum war machine, and UM out of Ipsy" covered downtown Ypsilanti streets and park signs. The light poles and the walls, the guerrilla information campaign was organized by the state, by the Stop the Data Center, which can be followed on Instagram at Stop the Data. Although the data center was publicly announced last year, construction will not begin until 2026, and is projected to be fully completed by 2030. Stop the Data Center is organizing to stop it as early as possible. And a look at similar campaigns around the country support Stop the Data Center strategy. Data Center Watch, www.datacenterwatch.org/report, reports that across the United States alone, $18 billion worth of data center projects were blocked, and another $46 billion of projects were delayed over the last 2 years. In the face of opposition from residents and activist groups, further, the study shows that data center opposition not only unites environmentalists, the anti-war and anti-gentrification movements, but also has bipartisan support. In April, activists began canvassing West Willow. In these initial conversations, canvassers reported, "People in the neighborhood surrounding the data center are deeply opposed to the data center. Of the 50 people who opened their door on our last Saturday out, 45 people gave us their contact information and were eager to get involved. People were just so grateful for the opportunity to fight against this project." May 24th, Stop the Data Center held their first assembly at North Hydro Park, which was attended by more than 80 people expressing anger and frustration over the project. The afternoon on May 29th, 1.5 activists were forcibly removed from the Sci-Fi M25 Scientific Discovery. In the Age of AI conference at the Rockham Building, of those, 3 there were grabbed, detained, and issued trespass citations and banned from the University of Michigan property. "Take action Are you willing to give up clean water and reliable energy for faster, more direct Google searches? What minor conveniences and natural resources are you willing to trade for prolonged wars globally and stronger surveillance locally? Stop the data center and housing monthly info in sessions in North Hydro Park. The next one is Saturday, July 14th at noon. Future dates will be announced on the Instagram and via their email newsletter. Stop the Data Center campaign is calling on concerned Washtenaw County residents, particularly those in Ypsilanti Township, to attend the upcoming Ypsilanti Township Board of Trustees meeting on Tuesday, June 17th, 5:30 p.m., located at 7200 South Huron River Drive.
La realidad desconocida. ¿Cuándo se hizo Puerto Rico Estado Asociado de Estados Unidos? 1952. Corrupción de narcotraficantes federales de Estados Unidos. España venta países a Estados Unidos y son bases militares de Estados Unidos. Sí, España permite el uso de ciertas instalaciones militares a Estados Unidos a través de acuerdos bilaterales. Se autoriza la presencia estadounidense en bases militares españolas como Morón de la Frontera y Fota. Estas instalaciones son utilizadas por el ejército estadounidense para fines militares y de apoyo logístico, o sea, los recursos necesarios para llevar a cabo una operación. ¿Por qué las islas producen lo que no tiene Estados Unidos? En Estados Unidos, cuando viene la temporada de invierno, o cuando hay tempestades, tornados, no se producen muchas cosas. Las islas de Cuba y Puerto Rico entonces producen mucho más de lo que no produce Estados Unidos. Cuba, por ejemplo, produce hace años el tabaco, el café, el azúcar y la ganadería, suficiente para abastecer a todo Estados Unidos. La tierra de Estados Unidos está muy seca por tanta nieve y sal. ¿De dónde se hacen tantas cochinadas? De lo que tiran en la basura. Dicen que es reciclaje. Tiran cosas feas en la basura, pero no se contamina así el producto reciclado. ¿Cuál es la diferencia entre reciclaje y compostaje? El compostaje no contamina la comida o las plantas, que se fertilizan con productos de compostaje contaminado. ¿De dónde pusieron los seres humanos sus pies si no saben qué hacer con tantos astronautas? ¿Por qué hay tanta conspiración en nuestra tierra cuando no tenemos que comer y tenemos millones de reciclaje y nuestros antepasados nos enseñaron a trabajar y no hablar tanta mierda? ¿Qué va a hacer cada vato en la luna? ¿Qué buscan ellos en la luna todavía? Todo ese dinero que están gastando en viajar a la luna, ¿por qué no lo gastan aquí en la tierra en hacer casa, en hacer trabajo de verdad a toda la gente que vende gran cobre en la calle? ¿Por qué la gente lleva años vendiendo periódicos y no trabaja? ¿Por qué en Estados Unidos hay tantas bombas debajo del mar? Es una conspiración tirando tantas bombas en el mar. Un día no van a tener pescado para comer. Se mueren. Si tiran en el mar también los trenes que no más usan tanta combinación en las aguas. Luis Gutiérrez protestaba contra Estados Unidos porque hacen tantas estupideces. Los manantiales son lo que producen los ríos y los pozos. Los pozos son como el agua salada, como el agua del mar de coco. ¿De dónde viene el coco? La cocotera o palmera de coco, como nucifera, tiene un origen incierto, pero se cree que se originó en las costas tropicales del Océano Índico y Pacífico, especialmente al sur de Asia. La evidencia sugiere que se dispensó a otras regiones tropicales del mundo, incluyendo Oceanía, a través de la emigración humana y la capacidad de los cocos por flotar en las corrientes marinas. ¿Por qué el café es amargo? Cuando le echa azúcar es tan dulce que tiene que tomar agua. ¿Por qué produce esa sensación intrigena en la boca? El manantial es brotado de la tierra como una flor sin madre. Una flor que se siembra sale de la tierra solita. Hay mujeres que no pueden tener niños, así que lo adoptan de una foster house. ¿Por qué hay tantas preguntas y a veces no hay respuesta? ¿Cómo un periodista de prensa le va a hacer una pregunta a un presidente y el presidente no va a contestarle? Como un estúpido sin escuela. ¿Quién sabe más, el periodista o el presidente? Si tu país tiene millones y millones de cosas para importar a otros países, ¿por qué hay tanta pobreza? La invasión de Playa Girón es traicionada por Estados Unidos, que al pasar por las grandes multitudes de la ONU de los Estados Unidos no explica el motivo de las depresiones humanas y enfermedades. Del cansancio. ¿Por qué el ser humano tiene tanta depresión? Porque es difícil la vida. Trabajamos, pagamos, cuidamos de la casa, eso va haciendo un trauma. ¿Por qué en años pasados el ser humano no pensaba en lo que piensa ahora uno? Antes la gente vivía como separada de la vida. Los seres humanos antes trabajaban la tierra, vivían en el campo, sin pensar en la luz, vivían de cacería. Si tenían que ser, bebían del río. ¿En qué año empezó el Facebook? ¿Por qué dijeron que el mundo se iba a acabar en el 2000? ¿Por qué el ser humano en este tiempo está tan cansado por la misma depresión, el mismo capitalismo, el gobierno, el comunismo? Cuando por cansancio te dan un bajo o humanitario, no comprende la traición. Cuando el policía se hace cabito, por un número de fracciones es una traición trabajar y tener que comer después. ¿Por qué los federales usan a la policía estatal y después se hacen deportaciones? ¿Por qué los policías federales mandan a los policías estatales a hacer cosas? Lo hacen por un rasgo y traicionan.